freaking auto!
This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Mark, Matt, Marcus, sorry about just
Mike.
Presented by Carter, Volkswagen, and Ballard.
On Seattle's Sports Station.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Where's like the Buff Dudes at?
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
Oh, yes, here we go. It is another Brock and Saul, Seattle Sports on 710seattlesports.com. Seattle Sports app as well. She caught that application today. A little formal Friday action. What's going on? And I just want to start off by apologizing to everybody. I'm sorry. I'd like to make a formal statement apologizing for coming back.
Oh, yeah. What'd you do?
It sounds like everything ran better without me. Justin and Maura for the 6 o'clock hour. The people sound sold on that. And then Aaron Goldsmith. Full on Wally pipped me, huh?
I said that at the end of the show. I was Wally pipped.
Sheesh. Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for defending me. Appreciate
I'm happy to have you back.
Well, it doesn't feel that way. No, I gotta say.
It's hard. You're kind of set up for failure when you have the guy that was like the hero for staying here this week that everyone was proclaiming their love for.
Right. Goodwill.
I came back here. Doesn't that count for anything? No? Oh, because I left first. I see. All right. Well, whatever. Fine. All right. Well, I'm glad you guys had fun with Aaron Goldsmith, who, you know, I now hate. And,
of course.
Yeah. Mortal enemies.
Yeah, I would say it seems like the only appropriate way to.
Beefing.
Yeah. I mean, go to St. Louis, pal. Like, you know. Like, what are we doing here? Why don't you head your butt back to St. Louis and
get your St. Louis pizza?
Right, exactly. St. Louis is disgusting. All right. Jokes aside, I think a couple of notes before I dig into the Kraken and some other stuff. I'm feeling a little sensitive today. I'm feeling old, Justin. And what I did Wednesday, Thursday kind of is adding to that. So I took my daughter Avery, who's 11. As soon as I left here on Wednesday after the show, I sprinted to my car, I raced up to go pick her up at school, and we jumped on a plane and went to Vegas.
Awesome.
Her first time in Vegas. And we were originally supposed to go see Aerosmith. That was the plan, is we were going to do one night. We're going to go see Aerosmith, which she was psyched about. She really wanted to see them. And then Steven Tyler got sick and then other stuff went down. But specifically for that, he got sick. At least that was the story. And so they canceled. And so we rescheduled for Wednesday to go see O at Bellagio, which, by the way, was very cool. Recommend.
What is O?
Cirque du Soleil.
Okay.
Very, very, very cool. Cirque du Soleil with water and amazing. But two things. One, my daughter's old enough to go with me to Vegas, which makes me feel incredibly old. It's really super rewarding as a dad to be able to go do that with her. And we had a blast and so much fun. But also, like, okay, she's 11. I started going to Vegas when I was like 19. And like now I'm 44, about to be 45. And I'm going to Vegas with my daughter.
Oh,
and like that definitely stung a little bit. I was sober in Vegas for more than 24 hours.
Okay, but it's not like she's 19. You just said you're
taking her
earlier.
No, I know, but she's
earlier.
Closer to that to the age I was than I am now. I do. I get it. But I was. Thank you. I appreciate it. That's very nice of you. I could use it this morning. I could use all the help you could get. It just made me feel a little bit old. That's all. Because you know, and then sober in Vegas. You know, kind of an oddity. I didn't gamble for one second while I was there. That's never happened, obviously.
Yeah, we can't.
I mean, I went and never once sat at a table. I couldn't. I mean, she's not allowed to do that. What am I going to do, leave her alone?
Ask some random adult, like, hey, you watch my kid for a
I'm watching her. She's fine. She's very mature. Just hang out over here.
Really feeling it.
Right. This table's calling my name. And also, I felt like Vegas was a little grimier than I wanted it to be. And I've never had that feeling before.
Oh, yeah. That probably makes you feel
better. I've always felt Vegas is very grimy.
I don't know, man. Like, it just something about it felt grimier than it used to.
Wait, and did you just hear what Justin said?
I know. That's what he loves about it.
Yeah, purposely choose Justin's the worst, cheapest hotel possible.
I mean,
Justin.
I stay at the Excalibur and it always smells like feet. But
$34
you know,
a night. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You told us that you plan your trips around, like, let's play at the most. Stay at the most like dirt hole hotel ever.
We walked through some of those. They smell like feet. It's disgusting. Avery walked in. She's like, why would anybody stay here? It's like, I don't know. It smells like feet. Let's get out of here.
Makes you feel alive, Avery.
I don't think that's what Avery thought. So anyway, those two things are sort of, you know, weighing on me, I would say, today and making me feel a little old. Like, for most of my adult life, Vegas has been like Mecca. Right. Like the place that I long to go to every year.
Right.
And just makes me happy. And unfortunately, Yeah.
Well, no, we didn't feel that now way. You make it sound like you're not happy to go and Vegas isn't a happy place and you're not excited to be there and it wasn't a good day.
I had a great time with her, but I'm not as excited to go back with my friends now. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I may need to process this.
It's like when your parents join Facebook.
Yes, it's exactly.
So you're like, oh,
yeah, I gotta go do something else. Yeah, that's exactly what it feels like.
There's now a curfew.
Except I'm the parent who's now joined Facebook.
You're aware of it.
And that's ruining it for me and probably for other people as well. I didn't get to see the Kraken game, obviously, on Wednesday night as I was traveling. We are going tonight, Justin and Maura and Betsy and I.
Yeah.
All going to see the Kraken tonight, which should be a blast. Looking forward to it. I know they won 6-1 and just, you know, Bjorkstrand with a couple goals and all that. But I'm sorry, man. I watched that hit from Tyler Myers on Matty Beniers, and that is filthy. And I asked the people, I said, hey, is there any more context to this? Nope. No context. That's just what happened in the game. He's just standing there minding his own business and got trucked by some 6'8 jerk. Dude, that's totally 100% dirty pool. Gross. Tyler Myers, man, I mean, forgetting about the size advantage and all of that, you don't hit a guy when he's not looking and knock him to the ice like that if he doesn't have the puck. I get it. There's some iffy moments where it's like, hey, if you're going to skate through the neutral zone, you better have your head in the swivel. Keep your eyes up. Okay. I get that. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I know there are some hits that target the head in those areas that are now banned in the NHL, and I totally understand why. But when they happen, you go, well, all right, keep your head up, man. Especially as a kid who everybody's taking shots at right now.
Yeah.
He's just standing there and gets trucked from behind. That is dirty. And unfortunately, it is continuing what has been a theme for Matty Beniers. Now, it was the worst, most egregious example. But every game I watch, he's taken unnecessary slashes, shots after the whistle, etc. Why? Because he's a 20-year-old rookie who's having success. I don't blame anybody on another team for trying to find out what he's made of. That's how hockey works. You're 20 years old and you're having some success in a skill position.
Sure.
Yes, people are going to find out whether or not you're tough.
So welcome to the league-ness to it.
But that was not that. This is how you injure a guy. Mm. This is how you give somebody a concussion. I mean, Maura will certainly remember the story of Mark Savard. Now, he was older when it happened.
Oh, my gosh.
But got cheap-shotted by, I want to say, James Neal, and essentially never was able to regain his career. I mean, he got drilled from behind in the face, hit the ground, and concussions ended his career. He was never able to return for more than a few games at a time.
He was in a hospital room with no lights for like a month.
Dude, it was awful.
Yeah.
And a really nice guy. I covered him for a little while. Super nice dude, everything else. But, you know, you cannot hit people on the ice like that. And unfortunately, it's happening regularly to Matty Beniers. I talked about this a couple weeks ago when we had John Forslund on, and I'm going to say it again today. Yes, it's great that Jamie Oleksiak defended this guy afterwards. I'm glad to see that Oleksiak fought Shen, and that's good. Got to have that. I mean, to not have some level of retaliation is unacceptable.
Yeah.
Absolutely unacceptable. But you've got to have guys on your team that the other team's a little bit afraid of too, or else this stuff keeps happening. And Oleksiak, God love him, happy that he stood up for his guy. But he's not that dude. He's not the guy that other teams are afraid of because he doesn't push things to the edge. He's a good hitter, which I love. He's good. I'm not taking a shot at Oleksiak. I think he should be on the team. Great guy. Want him on my team. But he doesn't have that extra bit of...
Not that moxie, not that.
That's not who he is. Yeah. He's not going to run you. And they might need a couple people on this team if they want to advance who are going to protect Matty Beniers, who are going to protect him not just by fighting afterwards, but by letting the other team know that if you want to play dirty, I can play dirty. And that's been the history of hockey.
I guess I'm surprised in the meantime that there hasn't been more of those guys who are like, I know this isn't my role, but somebody's got to do it.
They don't have anybody
to support a sacrifice.
They've kind of been phased out. There were a lot more of them.
And they've made some... when I say trade-offs with their roster, their fourth line has a lot of skill on it, right? And that's helped them win. So if you decide you want somebody who can provide a little bit more of that metal, you know, that may hurt some of your depth of scoring. When you're throwing out, you know, Tanev and Donato and Geeky and some of those guys on your fourth line, that's a scoring line, right? And we're seeing them go up and actually score against other teams. Not all fourth lines do that, and that has been a key part of their success. But this is the downside of it, is that you don't have a guy that everyone's a little bit afraid of. And because of it, your young rookie, who has been the biggest difference maker for you this year compared to last, he's feeling the brunt of it. So that's my little hockey rant to start the day. Excited to go tonight. And hopefully, as the deadline approaches here in a few more weeks, they're able to find somebody who can play that role. Or else I'm a little worried for Matty Beniers. And by the way, I hope he's healthy. I hope he's okay. I hope this isn't a concussion. I know he didn't play in the third period. So, you know, let's hope that this is more of a opportunity to learn a lesson as opposed to something that takes him out for a while, because that would just be... That would be terrible. I really want to watch the kid play tonight, and I'm looking forward to it. All right. Jerry DePoto in 20 minutes. Everything you need to know coming up next. Brock and Salk, CL Sports on 710, clsports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, I don't want to shock anybody this morning, but yes, it's true. There was another award given out in the NFL yesterday, and another deserving Seahawk who got passed over. This time, not a player, but executive, John Schneider, who lost out to Eagles GM Howie Roseman for executive of the year. Now, look, I'm not going to take a shot at Roseman. Very deserving what he's done, turning that franchise back around and made some big moves in the offseason, which are absolutely paying off. But, like, this isn't like when Ryan Grigson won in 2012 for drafting Andrew Luck. What a genius. But Schneider traded Russell Wilson, had the best draft class of the year by far, ended up with all of those starters from that draft class, and was willing to trade Russ. I'm sorry. I don't know how anybody can beat that, regardless of how good the Eagles have been this year. It's going to be a good weekend of football. I am ridiculously excited for Sunday. Honestly, this is probably as excited as I've been for two championship games as I can remember. I think both games are going to be gems. San Francisco at Philly at noon. Cincinnati, Kansas City at 3:30. We'll go through this a little bit more later, but I have no idea who's going to win these games. None. There's not a single combination of these four teams meeting in the Super Bowl that would surprise me at all. Both seem like pick-ems
to me. Physical impossibility for anyone?
I don't have a clue. You have any idea who wins these two games?
I mean,
all four teams are very, very good.
I have an idea.
I know who you're rooting for.
I think I have an idea.
I think I know who you're rooting for. I'm not convinced anybody knows.
No, I'm not.
Who's going to win these games? And I know that's always true in the NFL to an extent. But, geesh, what a fantastic Sunday it should be.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Yeah, I was just talking about this a few minutes ago. I appreciate that modern hockey is not what it was 35 years ago. And, you know, you had a Wayne Gretzky and he had to be protected by Marty McSorley and Dave Semenko and stuff. But the Kraken just can't allow Matty Beniers to continue to absorb the shots he's taken the last few weeks. Teams are clearly out to push him around. And I get that some of that comes from, you know, the territory of just being a young, good player. But the shot he took in the Colorado game and then followed by the dirty hit from Tyler Myers on Wednesday, that's the last straw for me. John Buchagras on with Bump and Stacey yesterday.
Yeah, that's such a clear-cut, dirty interference mugging. I just can't believe that even happened. And that stuff doesn't really happen too much anymore. So you got to take that, you know, matter into your own hands and protect your rookie and show them he's an important part of the team and do whatever you can, whether it's this time or next time or at that moment. So, yeah, at some point, and that might be something that, you know, the Kraken might be looking to add up front, maybe some snarl, maybe amongst the forwards a little bit.
Yeah, I would certainly like to see that, and I agree. Good to see Oleksiak drop the gloves with Shen afterwards, but it's not enough. That stuff can't happen, and you got to have somebody on the team to make sure it does not. All right, Kraken back at it tonight. Pretty good Calgary team in town looking for revenge after Seattle took it to them in their own building just 2 weeks ago. I'm going tonight with Justin and Mora, and I think the Kraken have just been playing some really, really good hockey. I don't think that, you know, takes any great genius to see. Just look at the scoreboard after every game, and looking forward to seeing them hopefully continue that tonight.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, hope always springs eternal in baseball, right? And after most Mariners fans felt like the roster was pretty well set heading into spring training, Jerry DePoto on this station yesterday on this show saying, not so fast.
I don't think so. I would be shocked if we didn't see multiple trades between now and spring training around the league, just based on the rhetoric we are hearing and the conversations that we're having. You know, whether we are among them remains to be seen, but you know, the WBC is going to, it's, it brings us to spring training earlier and clearly takes a lot of impact players away for a period of time. But I think clubs are still going to go about their business and build their roster, you know, the way they think they should. And, you know, and the WBC is, you know, it is going to be the tree that's falling, no matter if you're in the woods or out.
Good. Well, that's good to hear. The roster could certainly use a little bit more oomph, and I wouldn't mind a legit left-handed reliever. By the way, there are a few of those still available in free agency. Anybody want Matt Moore? That would be my top choice. I would love to see another lefty in this pen, and I'd even be intrigued by Zach Britton. I know some of it is, you know, about what he did 5 years ago instead of last year, but still curious. I also like this from Jerry. He had his comments about J.P. Crawford getting a little extra rest.
And we have a particular advantage in that we really do believe in Demo's ability to cover us at shortstop. And we are going to play in a division where there is a flood of left-handed starters, no matter where you go. So there's going to be great opportunity to give J.P. a day to just take a breath and stay strong through the season. And hopefully that allows us over the course of, you know, what we hope is closer to 180 games to play deep with what we think is one of our, that is one of the positions on our field where we feel like we can make the most progress is helping JP take that next step.
So two thoughts on that. First of all, good. He needs it. He needed it last year. I felt like they kind of overused him a little bit, and I think it really hurt him in the second half as he's not a huge guy, and he's dealing with injuries and playing through them because he's a tough dude, but I think it affected some of his productiveness in the second half and especially at the end of last year. Secondly, the Demo thing is kind of interesting, right? Because in theory, he's supposed to be splitting time and more of a platoon situation with Colton Wong at second base. So if he's in there for JP sometimes with lefties on the mound, who's playing second base? Because I don't think you want Colton Wong playing against too many lefties either. Does that mean we're going to see some Sam Haggerty at second base this year? We didn't. It's his natural position. I mean, he's basically been turned into an outfielder. But I wonder if we'll see some Dylan Moore and Sam Haggerty scat back days when they face some lefties this year. All right, there you go. That is everything you need to know, and we do that quarter past every hour here on the new Brock and Salk show, although apparently it's soon to be the new Brock and Aaron show. I know everybody was so gaga for Goldsmith yesterday. I see how it goes. No, it's fine.
Gaga,
well, I mean,
Goldsmith.
I wouldn't mind it if it didn't come at my own expense. I mean, like, I got a family to feed, for God's sakes. Like, I don't need to lose a job. I got contract negotiations coming up soon. Like, you know, I got to make sure I still have a gig around here.
I think he's got a baseball season coming up soon, too, to worry about, so you should be okay.
Oh, you mean when he decides to step into the spotlight calling every game? You don't think he can call games at night and then come in here in the morning?
Be here at 5:30.
You don't think he can pull that off?
Oh, he probably can. But he did mention, you know, that's it has a lot to do with his kids and his family. So
oh, okay.
Maybe that's
part of it. Oh, so he loves his kids and his family, too, huh? God, this guy's just perfect. Everything is coming up Goldsmith. All right. Well, he was here yesterday, and he and Brock had a really nice conversation with Jerry DePoto, which I think you guys are going to want to hear. Yes, he says there's a possibility of some more trades. Yes, he dropped that nugget about Dylan Moore, but a whole lot more in here as well. So stick around. It's Brock and Salk, Sales Sports on 710salesports.com.
The Jerry DePoto Show, presented by Seattle Pump and Equipment on Seattle Sports Station.
Oh, yeah, we do this every Thursday. President of your Seattle Mariners, kind enough to join us, deal with my nonsense. And now you get me out of the way, and we get to bring in the wheelhouse. Jerry, you ready for the wheelhouse? A little early for the wheelhouse?
It was just introduced for the first time that we had a script for this shindig. I'm excited about this moving forward.
Well, Jerry, welcome to the Aaron Goldsmith Show with Brock Heward. It's Jerry. From the bottom of my heart, it's great to have you. How are you?
Excellent, Goldie. I am thrilled to hear your voice.
Hey, likewise, man. Hey, tell me, like, first, I mean, we haven't talked in a while. Give me the best thing that you have eaten since the final out of the season. What's the best off-season meal for DePoto right now?
Wow, the best thing I've eaten since the final out of the season. So we spent some of our holiday vacation in Hawaii and at Maui, where we haven't been in a couple of years since the pandemic. So I had a Vietnamese crepe at Star Noodle in Maui, Hawaii, which is, it's the best thing that I ate this off season. It's phenomenal. And It seems simple. I'm not in tune with creating my own Vietnamese crepes, but I would traverse the Pacific to do it again.
Well, I mean, do tell. What is the inside of said Vietnamese crepe?
Yeah, it looks to the naked eye like a lettuce wrap, but oh, the naked eye can deceive. It is it's so much more than a lettuce wrap. It's just wonderful ooey gooey goodness with some shrimp and it wrapped in a butter leaf lettuce leaf that I can't describe it as it is joy. And it was actually one of those things that lands on the best things I ever eat list that sometimes comes across the Food Network. So it was intentional to go and try it. And it was all that it was purported to be. I actually went back a second time during our trip there to get it again. It was a trip.
Hey, do my sources report correctly? I'm going to be embarrassed if this is a major whiff. Did you see Big Sims at baggage claim in Maui?
I did. It was an amazing. Not only did I see him at baggage claim in Maui, but on Christmas Day, as I'm standing, hands on hips, gazing out over the Pacific at an amazingly large sea turtle that had decided to crawl up on the beach about 15 feet up in front of us. Much like Cousin Eddie in Christmas Vacation, I felt another body sidle up next to me and I turned around and it was Big Dave. And then we sat there ogling the turtle on the seashore and talking about the wonders that is Maui at Christmas time.
See, now I'm a good person, Jerry, but I do get jealous of that because I want to be the guy on the crew to ogle a turtle with Jerry on Christmas Day. And the fact that I got left out of that is disappointing to me. But I'm glad Dave has exclusivity over something. That's important, I think. Everybody needs to have something.
I think so. And it won't surprise you. I'm sure you'll be thrilled to know that I do have footage of both events. I have footage of said Vietnamese crepe and the giant sea turtle on the seashore.
Well, this is 5 minutes of the Jerry DePoto Show, unlike any 5 minutes in the history of the Brock and Salk Show. I'm kind of digging the wheelhouse. This may work moving forward. But I am going to intervene because I'm going to embarrass Mr. Goldsmith. I'm going to make him a little red maybe here, Jerry, because it has been a cool week for him. News was out last week or early this week about possibly losing Goldie to his hometown, St. Louis Cardinals. And you certainly felt on the social media realms and in the media realms for that matter in Seattle here, like, no, that can't happen. And eventually it looks like Aaron is going to be retained. It's going to be a Seattle Mariner for time to come. He's come to that decision from your perspective, right? Been in baseball for decades and decades and decades around some of the very best in it from a broadcasting standpoint. What does it mean to have Aaron Goldsmith back in Seattle and not going to the Midwest?
It's why I said I was thrilled to hear his voice when we started. I think that we are blessed in our market to have a wonderful set of broadcasters to listen to. The Mariners team, Goldie and Blo and Dave and Rick and Gary, just Shannon. It's a phenomenal job that they do. Aaron in particular, we've spent a lot of time together over these last 6 or 7, now going on 8 years, I guess. And it's not just the golden tubes that you hear, bellowing over the airwaves. It's a genuine curiosity about what's happening in baseball and asking good questions and developing good relationships. And I truly am thrilled that he's still here.
Well, that's very nice of you, man. Brock, you didn't need to say that, but Jerry, that means a lot. I appreciate that. We will pivot to the more important things here. Not that crepes aren't great, but let's talk obviously a little M's baseball here, Jerry. And there's a lot of different angles we can go here. But I was wondering the other day, I was thinking about your roster, the way it's constructed right now, and obviously expectations at an all-time high as they should be for the Mariners. When you talk about your ball club, it's really hard for you not to talk about Jared Kelnick. People have lots of questions year after year about Jared and what he will become. When you think of this season for Jared Kelnick, what will be a successful 2023 for Kelnick?
I think end-to-end traction, where it is not, a 2 or 3 day stretch, or it's not an exciting homestand, and it's not underlying information that you're hopeful will turn into results, but actually taking the skills that he has and the big tools that he possesses and turning it into day in, day out contribution. What that means in a slash line, I can't tell you. I do know Jared will play good defense. He will run the bases well. You're going to see the power play. It's the consistency and the day-to-day at bats and not riding the waves. Everybody goes high and low. You're going to slump in a season. But, you know, if Jared can keep his head above water, especially at the start, and let those skills play, I think you will see what he's capable of. And, I'd add this. Justin Hollander said to me, I don't know, about a week or 10 days ago, you know, what we still have to remember with Jared, Jared's younger than either of the two quarterbacks that played in the national championship game this year. So it's, you know, he's still a very young player by age, and he has some experience at the big league level. And we really do think that there's so much more in his tank.
Jerry, last week we were talking about Zips and Fangraphs and lots of those projections. The MLB Network this week and building up, and I think we're 3 weeks away from pitchers and catchers down there in Peoria and around baseball. MLB Network's coming out with their top 10 players at each and every position. So they rank them all, and they haven't done their starting pitchers nor catchers yet. And I think by all estimation, both the Big Dumper and Luis will be on that list. And so by counting, it's going to have at least 7. Ty France, Teoscar, Julio, Colton, and Munoz. 5 Mariners already in the top 10 of their position. Do you read into that at all? Does that make any difference in Jerry DePoto and Justin Hollander and your organization's world whatsoever that a network, MLB Network in this case, starting to find a lot more Mariners in the top 10 at their position than in years past?
Sure it does. You know, it suggests to us that we have good players and I do think we have good players, and you didn't even mention Gino Suarez, who, while third base is about as robust right now as maybe any time in baseball history, Gino's a good player, and to have that kind of depth with what we think are, you know, strong every day to impact players across the diamond is exciting. And you know, and we still feel like there's so much opportunity for upside growth with this team, because in some cases, like Goldie hit on with JK, or, you know, JP Crawford coming back, what we think is fully healthy. And, you know, after a season that wasn't as strong as the previous two, this is, you know, it's an opportunity for us to tap into, you know, some more with guys like that. And even some of our young pitchers.
Since you brought up JP, Jerry, what is the organization's thought right now on finding intentional days of rest for JP Crawford over the course of 162? We know he's a grinder. I've never heard Scott praise a player's makeup consistently, year after year, quite like he has JP Crawford. That's not a knock on anybody. I think it's more just straight praise for your shortstop. But we know that since his journey began in Seattle, one of the conversations that the Oric has had with J.P. Crawford is to strengthen himself to a point where he can play 162. And we have seen him go wire to wire. But I have a hard time, Jerry. My eyes aren't good enough to know when a player is worn down and needs a day. You guys are that smart. You guys also have the metrics and the tools that will help aid you in knowing that. Is there thought going forward to, against a tough lefty, after a string of 15, 18, 20 days in a row, you've got Dylan Moore, you can give Dylan a day at short, and you give JP a blow, and that will make him better and will make him stronger and help him over the course of 162. Is that a thought?
Not only is it a thought, it's something we're committed to doing more frequently this year. And, you know, we spoke to JP about it earlier this offseason, about planning those days. And you know, you've been around JP a lot. JP is one of the most competitive players that you'll encounter. And you wouldn't really, you know, catch this if I asked you to pick out, you know, those on our team who are really the old school throwback grinders that get out there and they view themselves as everyday players and in the Cal Ripken, Lou Gehrig mold. JP's that guy. You know, he shows up to play every day. And, you know, but what we've observed is that the season does take its toll on him. He's a very slim, athletic bodied guy. And, you know, it's when you're playing 18, 20 days in a row, get a day off and you do it again at a position as taxing as shortstop. You know, it's not easy. And, you know, I can't tell you if it's going to be, you know, 5 days or 10 days, but we are going to bake in some off days there. And we have a particular advantage in that we really do believe in Demo's ability to cover us at shortstop. And we are going to play in a division where there is a flood of left-handed starters, no matter where you go. So there's going to be great opportunity to give JP a day to just take a breath and stay strong through the season. And hopefully that allows us over the course of, you know, what we hope is closer to 180 games to play deep with what we think is one of our, that is one of the positions on our field where we feel like we can make the most progress is helping JP take that next step.
Safe to say, Jerry, that maybe doing away with some of these shifts will also help these players understand, just because that body's going to bark that much more. Your second baseman, your shortstops in particular, and the ground they're going to have to cover, and some of that range that we're going to see come back into play, or is that an over-exaggeration?
Oh, I don't think it's an over-exaggeration. I think it's a real thing. And you know, it's part of the appeal to us in Colton Wong, and part of why he shows up on lists of the best second baseman in the league is, you know, Colton, from a range perspective, even in what was otherwise, you know, an atypical season for him defensively, his range is still among the best in the league, if not at the top of that food chain. So, you know, he's got that quick lateral burst and can really cover that ground. And that takes away some of the sting of not being able to play a second baseman out in the point of a triangle that you've seen for most of the last decade. And similarly with JP, you know, he moves very well laterally, and particularly as he goes toward that five hole, you know, the play that's going away from first base where I think he's excelled over time. And, you know, this year, Perry Hill will be earning his dough. And I suspect in spring training, they're going to get after it, working on a lot of things that will, whereas before, much of our work in the mornings was focused on how to turn a double play where the third baseman is the pivot at second base coming out of a triangle, and, you know, nuanced things that you didn't see 20 years ago. I think we'll go back to some form of what Perry would have been teaching, you know, prior to the massive overshift.
Jerry, when we talk about the shift being banned and needing to have two players on either side of second base, feet on the dirt when the pitch is released, I think we immediately start thinking about the advantages that will give hitters, and understandably so. But I think something that Mariners fans probably either got used to over the last few years or maybe just took for granted, and it would be an easy thing to do, is how much of an advantage the shift gave your ball club. And that's not just to say the shift, but it really seemed like you all developed a great process for positioning and for implementing the shift. And the public numbers available indicate that the Mariners were in the top five, roughly, if not even maybe slightly higher, in terms of percentage of plate appearances with the shift on, especially against lefties, of course. How do you balance when you kind of forecast, you look in your crystal ball as to what this next season is going to hold with no shift, how do you balance the advantage that it will give your hitters, but also how much of an advantage it has given your pitchers? Because only you know the private data that you guys keep internally as to how many runs that prevented over the course of 162.
You know, it's funny you ask. We have a handful of hitters, you know, among them Cal Raleigh, who, you know, as a left-handed hitter especially, was among the most, I guess, penalized hitters in the league last year due to the shift, maybe number one. And if he wasn't number one, Carlos Santana was right there. Jared Kelnick is another that really suffered with, you know, some of the shifting. And we feel like the combination of what those guys could do, you know, moving forward offensively is probably, you know, neutralized a little bit by what we are going to have to deal with in reshifting or repositioning our defense. We have had a great deal of success in that regard. We're one of the shiftiest teams in the league. You know, we tend to convert those batted balls to outs as frequently, maybe more frequently than almost every other team in the league. We have been, you know, among the top five pretty consistently dating back to 2016, regardless of who was playing. And that was, you know, that was one of the reasons why, again, just focusing on Colton Wong, you know, adding Colton to the mix just gives us, we have a good defensive player at every position on the infield. And that's going to be required in a different way than it was, you know, maybe over the course of the last decade, where you could trick them a little bit with positioning and convert those outs. I still think we will be an above average defensive team, but you know, a credit to our analytics department, to Jesse Smith and John Chenier, what they've been able to do in building plans for us to better defend. We're going to have to find a new trick, and you know, that's on us.
Jerry, you mentioned Shannon Dreher earlier. She was on with us earlier this week. Ryan Divish was on with the afternoon guys this week. They both echoed the similar sentiment, and that was that with the WBC and just kind of the schedule and everything else that's going to lay out over the next few weeks, it may be hard to see further trades. That this roster and this team that we're looking at with these Mariners is largely going to be the team we'll see in 3 weeks. Is this WBC throwing a little wrench into maybe some of the trade market and what could have been leading up to spring training?
Huh. You know, I don't think so. I would be shocked if we didn't see multiple trades between now and spring training around the league, just based on the rhetoric we are hearing and the conversations that we're having. You know, whether we are among them remains to be seen, but you know, the WBC is going to, it brings us to spring training earlier and clearly takes a lot of impact players away for a period of time. But I think clubs are still going to go about their business and build their roster, you know, the way they think they should. And, you know, and the WBC is, you know, it is going to be the tree that's falling no matter if you're in the woods or out. they're going to play it. And we still have to go build our team the way we think it should be built over 162. And I do think that the pace at which this season's free agent market, proceeded. The top 50 free agents were off the board in a blink compared to most standard years. And I'm not sure there was enough time, you know, through November, December, you know, even, you know, right up through and I guess the coming out of the holidays for the trade market to really, I guess, blow up. And I do think you'll see a handful of trades between here and spring training as teams. And you're watching it now with the Royals and the Twins and the Red Sox. There are moves happening. It's just a matter of whether we are a part of it.
Jerry, I don't know if there's a question that a director of baseball ops or a general manager or a manager despises more than talking about starting pitchers and innings limits. Like that's never an easy thing to traverse from a person in your perspective, but it is a topic that obviously needs to be discussed. And it was discussed greatly last year. It shouldn't be overlooked. And I'm afraid it might have been, or maybe we just all didn't appreciate it to the extent that we should have last year, that you had a rotation, Jerry, that went wire to wire. And it's a great credit to your training staff. It's a great credit to your pitchers themselves for taking the time and preparing well and recovering well. You're now in a position where, and we saw at the end of last year, obviously, Flexen was moved to the bullpen, and there was great thought in the community that you would be trading a pitcher at some point over this season. As we speak right now, you have, if you wanted, you have six starting pitchers, and you have a rotation where you have one especially young pitcher in Kirby. You have another young pitcher in Logan Gilbert. You have three guys who ended the season in your rotation that are established veterans. And one of those, Luis Castillo, maybe a part of the reason why he was so good down the stretch was that his arm was fresher than others. He did miss approximately a month of the year because of a shoulder issue, I believe, when he was with Cincinnati prior to the trade. So innings will again be something to monitor and to discuss and think about. You have six starters. Has there been thought internally of a six-man rotation? How are you approaching how that will be forecasted for this season for your rotation, which is, of course, a major strength of your ball club right now?
You know, I mean, dating back to, boy, I could go back to 2017 if I thought about it, with the number of times we've discussed, you know, six-man rotations or the viability of it. We did it for a period of time and in 2019 and 2021. There are benefits to it. You know, that said, we haven't really had that conversation with this group. And, you know, we are more likely to go into spring training with the six starters that you presently see. We're also more excited about the depth and back of our top six, you know, guys like Dollard and Hancock and Wu and Miller who really excite us about the next, wave of pitching talent coming to Seattle. But we'll get to spring training and we are going to be a little bit more methodical in how we develop our innings, especially, you know, considering the young guys and what they did and taking that big step forward innings wise. And that's where, you know, it's really, it goes under the radar, how valuable, you know, Robbie Ray and Marco Gonzalez and even Flex, regardless of whether he was moved to the bullpen last year, these guys can go out there and churn innings. And, you know, give or take 10, you're going to throw about 1,450 innings in a year. And when you can get, you know, a Ray or a Gonzalez or a Flexen who can go out and take out 185 to 210 of those innings and do it at league average or better rates in terms of run suppression, you're in a really good position because that allows the other guys to do what they do. And we're seeing traits in Kirby and in Gilbert and we know this to be true of Castillo. Like they have the impact ability in whatever innings they throw from 170 to 200 to really change a staff. So we are going to be really leaning on those guys who have history of churning the innings, and it's an important part of how our team is built.
Well, I'll tell you what, you had me a Vietnamese crepe, the ooey gooey shrimp stuff. You kind of had me 22 minutes ago.
For me, it was more ogling a turtle. I'll be honest.
The
crepe sounded great, but when you involve sea turtles,
yep. Either way, you had us right from the jump and carried us all the way through the Jerry DePoto Show. Once again, Jerry, thank you so much for doing this every Thursday. I can't believe in 3 weeks, pitchers and catchers will be reporting. Continue to get closer and closer, and we do appreciate every Thursday that you sit down and join us. And this week, a little preview of the wheelhouse. Kind of get a little warm-up, a little spring training for the old wheelhouse as well. So thank you, Jerry. Appreciate you, man.
All right, guys. Talk to you next week.
All right, there is Jerry DePoto with Brock and Aaron Goldsmith yesterday, and great job by them. And yeah, again, people pretty excited about Goldsmith yesterday, and that's fine. I'll be seeking some level of revenge at some point. Maybe doubled rank today or something along those lines to try to reassert
my control. His ranking was everybody's favorite part yesterday.
What did he rank?
His top five best and top five worst ballpark songs.
Walk-up songs.
Now, what does he do tomorrow?
So it was very clean and concise. He had a clear top five and a clear bottom five.
What do you do the day after that and the day after that and the day after that?
It's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. It's cool to come in for one day and do some fun rank that everybody loves.
Okay.
But it's different if you have to do it every day.
Okay,
this
rank
is
whatever
job.
You want, but a top five and a bottom five is
not
so
sustainable.
Clean and concise.
Not sustainable, Maura.
Oh,
not sustainable.
Gosh.
People like it one day. It's like when you play Seth Smith, you're like, cool, he's great against righties. Don't start him against lefties, because guess what happens?
I don't care if it's sustainable or not. It's what a ranking actually is. You guys do is word association, is list, is whatever you want to call
so
it.
You're so caught up
in the
you're so
Brock?
Linear. Like your fingers.
Oh,
you're so
God.
Linear, just
now
like your giant elongated fingers. All right. Coming up next, I am irrationally excited for Sunday. Tell you why coming up. It's Brock and Salk, Sales Sports on 710, salesports.com.